Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, joined by my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What is going on, the people of magic?
So today it's just us. We have no guests, but we are going to do kind of a state of the union, but it's going to be a state of what modern is right now. We're on the verge of Modern Masters 15, and, you know, Dragons of Tarkir has hit the scene, and, you know, we want to kind of talk about what's going on right now in Magic. So we're going to go through each of the different tiers of decks, and then follow that up with kind of how Modern Masters is going to affect Modern moving forward.
Because it seems fairly obvious that Wizards is trying to grow the format, both with the Modern Masters expansions in 2013 and 2015, as well as reprinting Fetchlands and just several years ago Shocklands and Ravnica. They're very interested and keen on this format getting bigger. So this is the next step in that process, and we really want to talk about what are the cards that are going to be in your hands if you want to build a Modern deck. What can you expect to play against at the next tournament that you can see in someone else's hands? And so we want to look at the state of the format.
Right. Before we get started on all of that business, I do want to mention, you guys should be following us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. If you go follow us, pause what I'm saying. Go follow us, come back, and then tweet at us in some order. You can pick which order you do that in. We'll respond, and it'll be fun, because we like interacting with you guys, and hopefully you guys like interacting with us.
Yeah, we've gotten some really, really awesome interaction from you guys recently, actually. Like, definitely, like, insightful answers to our questions. We've given away a couple of booster packs, which is pretty cool. So Interact with us, and maybe you'll get talk back and booster pack.
Yep, and that includes rating us on iTunes. You can even email at us at the very end of the cast. Our feminine
or
intro
email
host
us right now
sends us tells you what our email is. So we'll talk to you
about it right now.
The format as it stands, so we're actually rated kind of the format into three tiers, but technically it's five tiers. There's a tier zero and a tier 1.5. So what tier zero is it's the base level of the format. This is the deck that power levels have to be judged against. And it is also generally the deck that has won most consistently. For a while, it was actually Birthing Pod, all last year, pretty much. And before that, a lot of the times it was Jund. Jund was kind of the original tier zero deck of the format. Right now, it's Splinter Twin. But between the last GP and the last Pro Tour, it winning both of them, it's kind of cemented itself as the deck that kind of forces deck decisions to be made, and your general game plan walking to a tournament has to keep it into consideration.
Yeah, what's really interesting about Splinter Twin, when you talk about it in terms of a format baseline, it's a super, super hard line, whereas those other decks you mentioned, Jund and Birthing Pod and Abzan, I guess would be the other sort of public enemy number one deck, they're not, because those are very good value decks that I guess Pod had the ability to kill you with a combo. Twin is very simply, if you do something wrong and you're not prepared for me, I'm going to kill you on the fourth turn of the game. That's how this works. So when you think about, like, I'm going to take X, Y, or Z deck to a tournament, you have to think about tier zero in terms of, like, what does this deck do on turn three? And obviously any deck we're going to talk about on this list has that in mind. But if you were going to brew something, if you had a card you wanted to try to make a deck around, it's very simple. You cannot tap out on turn three. You can't do it.
Well, and not to mention, if you look at the tier one and 1.5s, a lot of these decks have a plan against that problem of a tier three twin situation they get run into. Either it be kill them quicker, put them on tilt so they have to be able to respond to what you're doing so they can't combo off, or stop their combo through removal and or discard.
Yeah, I mean, some cards that come to mind, obviously one of Kessler's favorites is Geist of St. Draft, and one of my favorites is Grand Architect. Different power levels, I'd say. But they both suffer from the same problem in the format right now, which is that Twin is too prominent. You can't get away with a strategy that focuses around casting one of those cards on the third turn of the game. It just doesn't work.
So moving past tier zero, tier one. So these are you know, along with Splinter Twin, this is what generally our gauntlet is every week, unless we're deck teching one of these decks. We've deck teched, I think, every single one of these decks, except maybe the second one. And these are kind of the decks that you are going to face in a tournament. These are the ones when you walk into the doors, you can pretty honestly expect to play them at least once, if not twice, per tournament. These decks are
Abzan Midrange, Infect, Burn, and Affinity.
Right, and that Burn is actually now Naya Burn, apparently, according to all the websites that I did research for this episode on.
I mean, it's just a red deck that plays, like, Boros, Charmer, Tarkus, Command. That's it.
That's Naya colors. That's yeah. Green and white and red. Okay. So that's kind of tier one. These are all the pillars of the format. These are what, like, if you were to say, have a new player ask, like, what decks make up the modern format, these are the five that I would list to them.
I almost put Abzan Midrange into tier zero. I almost do. It's right on the edge.
They're comparable.
Yeah.
They're comparable.
It's the counterpoint to Twin. It's when we say that tap out on turn three thing, you can tap out on turn three for Liliana because you've Thoughtseize them on turn one already. Right. Probably.
Right. So these are kind of the decks. Like, Infect is along with Splinter Twin and the two premier combo decks that kind of put the clock on people and making it so you have to be very reactive to be able to play this game. Abzan Midrange is kind of your major control, is like the closest thing to control the format has. It's the major permission deck. It has Thoughtseize, it has discard spells. This is kind of the one deck that is able to answer these things because it's proactive about answering. Modern is not a format that allows reactive play. So having something that's proactive is the major way you're able to stop decks from doing what they're trying to do.
Which is why, yeah, three out of those four are very aggressive.
Burn and Affinity. I mean, like, what's really interesting about this whole list is other than Abzan Midrange, with turn zero and tier one, it's almost entirely heavily aggressive, turn three possible, turn four combo decks that all attack on very different axes. Like, Burn, life gain is good against them, but it's terrible against Infect, and it's terrible against Splinter Twin. Infinity, you need, like, specialized artifact hate to be able to stop them because they're so resilient. And, like, really, life gain isn't that good against them either because they swing at you in chunks of 12 damage at a time. So, like, all of these decks are very aggressive but from completely different angles. And this is some of the complaints people have with the format.
Right, Abzan Midrange, you try to sideboard against Abzan Midrange, it's just a good stuff deck.
Yeah. They're 55% better than the field is what most pros say. It's like, it's not 90% better than every deck, but it's just consistently decent against every deck. They have no terrible matchup.
So that's those would be the five strongest decks. If you wanted to just walk into a tournament blind and have the best chance to win a tournament without a ton of practice, that would be one of those five decks would be the deck you would probably want to bring with you.
Right.
You would have. Now, we'll get into tier 1.5 here, and I want to say Jund is the old Abzan. It was the original Abzan.
When Bloodbraid Elf was Rhino.
Yeah, and quite honestly, it's not played as much these days, but I don't know that it's that much worse than Abzan, really.
Well, see, I think part of... There's two issues. One, Rhino is just a much better 4-drop, and these decks kind of like having that 4-drop at the top of their curve.
Yeah.
The other one is I actually don't think Lightning Bolt, if you're not being aggressive, is that good of a card in the format.
Right now.
Well, and it's really good, obviously. It kills everything, but I think it actually does more to warp the format around it than it actually does to be a useful answer in decks because so many cards are built to be able to be resistant to Lightning Bolt.
Which is hilarious. Because if you're explaining your idea to a novice and you're playing three toughness creatures and they're like, well, Lightning Bolt. And you're like, well, no one's playing Lightning Bolt right now. It's like you're like so meta right now if you're trying to explain
that
to them.
Well, people are like, Burn does. Like, that's why I think like aggressive decks play Burn. Splinter Twin plays Burn because it's a good catch-all answer in the two colors it's playing. But really when it comes down to it is the decks that want to do damage to your face will play Lightning Bolt. So Zoo, Burn, Twin... more because Twin has the tempo playing with Snapcaster Mage, Delver decks, they all play Lightning Bolt. So Lightning Bolt is around, but it's only good if you're really going to plan on throwing them at your opponent's face. And right. You're just like, maybe I'll get value early if I need to stop a creature that I need to kill.
So basically, other than the big differences are Path to Exile and Rhino and Lingering Souls. Those are the three cards that that Abzan gets that Jund doesn't get.
Right.
While Jund gets Lightning Bolt, Jund gets
Chandra,
and Jund, in theory, gets, like,
Terminate. It gets some random other okay cards.
Yeah, Terminate's pretty solid. Yeah. I mean, it has some other four drops you'll see show up
Olivia
sometimes.
Olivia Valdarin is played relatively. Huntmaster if you're in like a heavy burn metagame. Yeah. So on this Lightning Bolt point, I guess. But if you look at every one of these main decks, they all have pretty resistant Lightning Bolt. They're all pretty resistant to Lightning Bolt. Splinter Twin has Deceiver Exarch, which is the major part of the combo. And they really, like most lists I looked up online, play two Pestermite for Deceiver. Because it's just that much better.
And it warped more and more in that direction as people played more Electrolyze, people played more Lightning Bolt. You saw less and less Pestermites. The old versions, there was a long period of time, probably not that long, probably about 6 months, where the deck played legitimately four Deceiver, four Pestermite, four Twin, and 2 to 3 Kiki Jiki.
Right.
And then it just slowly but surely was like, Pestermite's not that good, Kiki Jiki's too slow, we just need more control cards.
Yep. And that's kind of where we're at right now. Next, moving into... Oh, I guess finishing my Lightning Bolt rant. Go back. Abzan Midrange, every one of its creatures is Lightning Bolt resistant. Like Lingering Souls, Lightning Bolt's terrible against. They're not playing Bob anymore because it's bad against Lightning Bolt.
Yep.
Corsair Crew Fix is good against Lightning Bolt. Rhino is amazing against Lightning Bolt. Like, all these cards just kind of brick wall that one card, so it's not really good against them. At best, it kills Liliana if it decides to make you sack a creature, and then you're already down a creature.
And you can say the exact same thing about Jund. Jund, Lightning Bolt is great in Jund. Lightning Bolt's terrible against Jund.
Right.
So Jund is part of Tier 1.5. Tier 1.5 also hosts the most consistent tribal deck in the format. I mean, I guess if you could consider Affinity a tribal deck, sort of, but it's not really.
It's like a...
Yeah, Merfolk
is... Super type tribal versus type tribal.
Merfolk is really an interesting one. Kessler, you told me as you were looking through lists to make this up, you saw a lot of those in the top eights.
So Merfolk consistently does well. I think part of that is the fact that Splinter Twin is so popular and the Island Walk is like super relevant with that matchup. I do think, like, we talked with Glenn when Glenn was on the cast. We did Merfolk as it was one of like the first deck techs we did. And Master of Waves really put that deck above and beyond what it used to be. It's resistant to Lightning Bolt.
Because of Lightning Bolt.
And it's resistant to Abrupt Decay,
yep.
Which is even more important. So, like, those are the two best things you can possibly be doing. It's super fast and aggressive, and that's kind of what you need to be doing. It's aggressive, it's resistant to the major removal spells of the format, and it's really kind of hard to disrupt because it's so... like, almost all the cards are the exact same card. It's a deck filled with all of the same cards.
It really takes the concept of redundancy, like, to the limit. It also, you get some semi-free counter spells, which is cool.
Yep.
You get Curse Catcher. I've seen some of the lists play, what's the other Curse Catcher? Judge's Familiar. I've seen that. We'll get thrown in sometimes out of sideboards.
You also get, like, one of the better land destruction spells in the format after Blood Moon, which I would say
Spreading
Seas. So, like, against a junk player, you can just wreck them by, like... cutting their color off and then having island walking creatures that are just going to get in there.
And certain matchups, Disrupting Shoal can be pretty powerful.
Right. You get advantage of the best land. I mean, we don't need to do a Merfolk, deck. But so Merfolk's on the list. Jund, Amulet Bloom, which we've talked about, it did really well. I put it actually in a lower tier for now. I originally had it in tier 1.5, in tier 1, but because of the kind of the cheating that has gone on with the deck, and we know that the one person that was doing well with it got caught like holding his top set or his first seven cards in his hand before the game started and just inconsistently skewing the results based off of the amount of times he could go off on turn one, makes me feel like I want to see how well this does in the next GP. And if it does well, I'd move it right back to turn 1.5. It is one of the most powerful decks in the format when it's doing what it's supposed to do.
But you have to remember that we've seen... there's a number of decks that we've seen do really powerful things, really unfair things. Goryeo's Vengeance comes to mind is another deck that's kind of a similar thing.
Right, but this is more consistent than those decks end up being. Just because it has more interaction, it is, like, the cards that it's doing, like, it has a much better inevitability engine. Like Goryeo's Vengeance is just going to do that one thing eventually. This one could just eventually hard cast a Primeval Titan, which is pretty much going to get them there.
Right.
So it definitely has a lot more going for it. I just don't know how good it is if no one's cheating with the deck.
Sure.
And I don't think... I mean, like, it's possibly very, very good. And if someone on the internet thinks I'm wrong, please tweet at me. I'd love to hear it. But, like, right now I want to hold back saying, oh, man, it's tier one.
Sure. Okay, that's fair. And then the last one in here is kind of a newcomer on the scene, which is Collected Company Abzan.
If you mean by new one, you mean Birthing Pod, but with Collected Company instead of Birthing Pod.
So this is a really cool thing. I personally am working on a Collected Company deck at the moment that we won't get into, but I have been firsthand witnessing the power of that card. And I've seen an Elves list, I've seen the Abzan list.
Right.
This is, it's essentially Like Anafenza has replaced Malyra in the infinite life gain or infinite kill you.
Right, because it's a serviceable creature that can also just sometimes get you infinite life.
So there's a couple versions. There's one version that plays Congregation at Dawn and then Collected Company.
The one that's doing the best right now plays Collective Company and the Convoke Tutor.
Okay, yeah, Court of Calling.
Court of Calling. Yeah. Just those two cards together give it the consistency it needs to, and really, because like the point is with these decks is to outvalue your opponent. Birthing Pod was a mid-range value deck first and a combo deck second towards the end and towards when Birthing Pod was the best deck possible. And so these decks can sometimes combo. Sometimes you'll get infinite life. Sometimes you'll get the super giant, unlimitedly big angel combo in play. But more often than not, it's just trying to outvalue your opponent, get creatures that gain value when they come into play, using spells that gain value when you cast them, and then using Court of Calling to maybe combo out.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely the whole, aggro control. Aggro control is what fairies was always referred to as. A deck like this that is like sort of doing something fair.
It's aggro
and
mid-range.
Aggro mid-range. Yeah. Or it's like mid-range combo.
It's value aggro.
Yeah, it's a weird style.
It's mid-range. It's for sure mid-range. You're not killing them on turn three unless you combo out by like just blind luck.
Yeah, but the thing about playing a deck like this, any deck like this that can win out of nowhere, you have this sense the whole time of like, okay, I have to be doing something proactive enough on my turn to expect that I might have a chance of winning. Because if I give them four turns, they'll probably win by drawing a combo piece or a tutor to get their combo piece to kill me.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if I get them to two. It doesn't matter if I go to four and it's close, or if I stay at 22, they'll just kill me if they draw the right card. So
right.
It's like this weird inevitability thing where you're just kind of terrified of everything you do. It's definitely a unique style of deck. Collected Company is the real deal, though. I can say that much.
Right. And interesting enough, I would say if Collective Company gets better and better, Tron decks will move up in my list of where they are currently in my tiers, because Tron's best matchup was Birthing Pod. When Birthing Pod was doing well, Tron would do well. And since Birthing Pod been gone, they have kind of just been missing on the scene. But with Collective Company, I'd be interested to see what the Collective Company Tron matchup ends up being like.
So I want to get into tier two, because tier two seems to have like most of my favorite decks in the format, or at least decks that have like just like cards that I think are really sweet.
Right. So these are decks that perform consistently well, are kind of always around. You know, these are decks that a lot of times that also people pick up and then just they lock on no matter when they're good in the format, and they swing how like they're like a for instance, Boggles is on this list. Boggles will do really well when Abzan's not well, when Liliana's aren't everywhere, and then we'll get worse when Abzan drops. Starts being the most played deck. So, like, these are a lot of decks that are very matchup based, and depending on how the metagame has shifted, will do better or worse. First is Blue White Red. This has kind of been my original deck in the format. I've been playing Blue White X since I started playing Modern.
But you have a sweet version of this deck that you personally play. The version you play is like you play Kiki Jiki and Angel, and you also play Soulfire Grandmaster.
Yes.
Which is sweet.
In the land of blue, white, red brew controls. But yeah, I mean, like, one of my complaints with the deck always was it felt like I was working towards mediocrely maybe killing them while the opponents were working. And this is the problem with blue decks in general, I think, in the format. My end game is meh. Well, and like generally is killing them by like whittling them down accidentally with my lands. Well, their game plan is like very proactive into the format, and they as every other deck. And the change I did to my blue white red deck is with the Kiki Jiki combo, I at least have a end of your turn Restoration Angel on my turn, I win.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely sweet. Right. I played a game against this deck the other day with the brew aforementioned, and there was definitely some really cool interaction stuff going on with Kiki Jiki copying. You have a copy of Venser in there.
Venser is actually really good and Modern. I might want to do an entire episode on that card.
Venser's like one of your favorite cards of all time.
It's probably my top 10.
Yeah.
Sweet.
But like Kiki copying Venser, or like Kiki copying Soulfire when I try to kill Soulfire so that his bolt could gain him life. Like it was like pretty sweet.
Yeah. More decks, Scapeshift. This was a much more tier one deck before the bans. I do think it needs a slightly better dig spell than it has right now.
I thought Anticipate was the sweetest spell.
I mean, Anticipate has brought it from not tier two to tier two, I would say. I think it was like off everyone's radar and is now just more consistent. But it needs something like Dig Through Time. It needs something like Ponder.
Something powerful. So,
just something that is on the same power level at least as Serum Visions, and Serum Visions, you need like you need at least four more of what that card
and
is.
And Sleight of Hand sucks.
And Sleight of Hand is the worst.
off record, so I know that the FNM promo that this fall, or no, is it this fall?
August.
Yeah, so this fall is Serum Visions?
Well, August is summertime.
Well, it's like end of summer, beginning of fall.
I mean, it's summertime.
Okay, fine. So in August, in summer, Serum Visions is happening. Does that mean that Serum Visions is going to be in standard?
I don't think so. I think for the summer, because it's like the modern summer with the pre-TQ season is this summer as well.
Yeah.
And with Modern Masters 2015, they're doing Path to Exile, which is also not an MM15, as the July promo. And August is Serum Visions. I wouldn't even be surprised if maybe September's promo is also like a staple.
Like Remand or something. No.
Or something they didn't print in MM15.
Yeah, what was one of the, like Inquisition maybe or something?
Or Miomancer?
What?
Mimomancer? No. Avon Mind Sensor.
Mind Sensor.
I'm going to make that mistake. There's just some cards that I lock onto this name, and this podcast gets to hear it.
Such a sweet card. We've talked about
it before. I know. It's a 3-1 that makes it a 3-1. We literally have mentioned this 3 times now. moving on. Grixis, Blue Red Delver. This is a newer deck on the scene, and it actually might be a higher tier. It might be tier 1.5.
It's really good.
It's a little bit new. It uses Tasigur in the like instead of Treasure Cruise, basically. It basically is the same Blue Red Delver deck, but it's playing Tasigur and Thoughtseize, which are two good cards.
Yeah, totally. And I've seen there's the one list in the mocks that the guy was playing that had Kolaghan's Command.
Oh, yeah.
And Kolaghan's Command and Deprive. Did you see that?
Yeah. I played against it actually this last weekend. It's sweet.
Oh my god, it's sweet. Kolaghan's Command with Snapcaster Mage is just like
right. Well, they the instant speed discard with Snapcaster Mage where they can like double discard you so you don't get the draw card for the turn is nuts. Instant speed discard is bad. Wizard, stop printing it. And by bad, I mean bad for me and good for winning.
Yeah, that's really good.
So Tron, we mentioned it before. We've deck-teched it. Big creatures. We'll actually talk about it a little bit later in the episode. Zoo, you know, this is the classic aggressive deck in the format. It's always going to be around. People are always going to play it. Nakdal is a good card. But it's never been able to really be dominant since they unbanned Nakdal.
Yeah, it is weird. I was working on a list with this recently that I was thinking about playing for the summer, which is like Nakdal Delver, essentially. And I was thinking like Atarka's Command is like just really sweet with Delver, so I wanted to try to play that in that kind of a deck. It's really powerful. It's difficult to justify playing Naya. And if you play more than Naya, like a Tribal Flames version of the deck, you just take so much damage. With Burn being as prominent as it is, it's just too affinity. Like, it's just too difficult. You just die too fast.
Black-White Tokens. This is maybe the other one that I do think is possibly a tier 1.5. This generally does well. Bitter Blossom brought it over the top. We mentioned before that being good against removal spells is good in this format, and Lightning Bolt and Path is terrible against Black-White Tokens. The new Sorin is also very powerful in the deck, making the life swings against Burn just insurmountable for them. So it definitely has a really good game against parts of the field. And Infect is not good against Lingering Souls. Infect's biggest problem is Lingering Souls, because all your creatures are 1/1s, so you have to waste spells to get past it. Next, Boggles. We mentioned this before.
Yep.
I mentioned it right before we started. Soul Sisters, we deck-teched this the other week. The more Burn in the matchup, the more Delver that's being played, the better. The worse it gets when people are playing just value Abzan decks or Affinity match, or just Abzan and Infect. The more Abzan and Infect, the worse Soul Sisters is. Living End. Travis Wu came on and brewed it with us. Another thing, like, actually, this is a deck that if Zoo got better, Living End would get better.
Right.
Living End is really good against creature decks. The more of that in the metagame and the more, like, counterspell decks in the metagame, the better this deck will be.
Yes. let's get to the final tier. Tier 3, which Tier 3 wrote, showed up on dailies, you will see them, new brews on the scene. This is basically every deck that exists in Magic that is known. If a deck does even remotely well at any tournament, or even like just 4-0s a daily, it becomes kind of on.
Right, and sometimes these are decks that could just outright win a Pro Tour, like, or like top 8 a Pro Tour from left field. They're inconsistent normally. They're cool, but they're generally big flashes in the pan.
I mean,
this
I'm going to name
the decks that you create generally.
I'm
really your tier 4.
Me, I'm going to name a couple decks that showed up in this category at one time.
Yeah, just we don't have to talk about each one.
Living End, Soul Sisters,
not Living End.
it originally showed up in this kind of category.
Oh.
No, these are not. Now, I'm saying when you're talking about this category, decks that were originally in this category at
that
one time,
have graduated to higher levels.
Living End, well, I would definitely put in this category. Amulet Bloom is the cornerstone of this. Yep. Deck, because that deck was around for over a year before it broke out.
Merfolk.
Yeah, I would say Merfolk.
Boggles.
Boggles, probably, yeah. Soul Sisters. And then the other ones that are listed here, which are Dredgevine, Blue-White Control, Fairies, Collected Company Elves, Blue Moon, Goryeo's Vengeance, Ad Nauseam, and Twinning End. For those of you who are wondering what Twinning End is, I asked myself. Kessler can tell you right now.
it's Living End, but they play Splinter Twin combo in it just for funsies.
Sweet. Ad Nauseam is like the old Legacy combo where you pay a bunch of life, right?
Yeah, basically you make it so you can't die. You use the Phyrexian life card and you basically can draw your whole deck out and then kill someone through like two different burn cards.
Conflagrate.
Yeah, conflagrate.
Goryeo's Vengeance was the one that got popular on that one like 4-0 to daily and somebody wrote
it. Puts Emrakul into play on turn two, or can put Emrakul into play on turn two and then use or Grizzlebrand and then get multiple attack steps to kill them.
I've seen people do this. I've also seen people do the thing where they like go all in with Emrakul on turn two and then somebody sacks two lands and takes 15, and then their deck just totally flames out because they just went all in, and like you're at 5 and you just win. So that's probably one of the reasons. Blue Moon was the deck that showed up in the top 8 at a Pro Tour like 3 Pro Tours ago,
right.
I think.
And it's probably one of the other control decks. It does decently. The more 3-color decks are seeing play, the better it does. The better Splinter Twin is, the worse Blue Moon is.
Yes, exactly. Collected Company Elves, we mentioned earlier, it's just an Elves deck that plays Collected
Company. It's a classic Elves deck, and Collected Company might be the card draw value engine it's needed this whole time to be able to kind of compete. It's brand new, so this could graduate to a higher tier.
I have seen a couple people streaming it this last
week. Yeah, it literally has just showed up onto the scene. Fairies came back with Bitter Blossom. It's always just not been good enough. What it's trying to do doesn't really succeed.
The hilarious thing about Fairies to me is that, okay, the cards that are in this Fairies deck that are in Modern are basically cards that existed and were legal when Fairies was in Standard, and it was the most oppressive deck. And I'm trying to think if there's anything that immediately comes to mind. That maybe you play Inquisition
spells.
Maybe, but pretty much it's just cards from Standard. And they banned Bitter Blossom originally thinking this would be too good. People did okay, like they did all right with Mono Blue and the Blue Red Fairies deck a couple years ago. Now that Bitter Blossom is back, it doesn't seem like it's doing anything. It's like how... It's like super funny to me. This seems like it would be super powerful. Just doesn't.
It ended up Bitter Blossom. It does more work in black white tokens. I mean, this is actually our friend Jules mentioned this to me when I was talking about them unbanning it, and he was like, "I don't think they're not unbanning it because of fairies." He was blatantly thought it might make black white tokens too strong, which it does. It makes black white tokens a tier 2, possibly tier 1.5 deck in the format.
Yeah, it is. It is funny too that like basically, Lingering Souls is the worst thing in the world for fairies. It's the card that they want to see the least, and that's the card that like you pair with tokens,
right?
So it is funny that you just forget fairies. I'll just play tokens.
Blue white control. This is similar to the blue white red decks, but the blue white red decks are generally burn themed. They like have some game plan of Snapcaster Mage plus Lightning Helix and Lightning Bolt. These are the decks that are much more about like these are classic control decks and. They do okay. They're not the worst deck, but they also, there's something missing for control in this format, and I'm not exactly sure what that card would be that they need to introduce to make it better.
Yes.
And Dredgevine.
Lastly.
My favorite deck ever, maybe? At least my favorite standard deck I ever had. It dredges. It gains value. It doesn't do very much in the end. It's not explosive enough. There's not a way to like take advantage of the dredge.
Chapin like tried this at the Pro Tour?
No, not this last one.
When who
Chapin did the like Esper Delve deck at the Pro Tour.
Oh, okay. He tried this at a Pro Tour, I think.
Possibly, I don't know.
Well, maybe I'm just mixing up that Delve deck this deck. Yeah.
That's kind of the third tier. I mean, there's a ton of decks in the third tier. In fact, if we could list, we can just continue to list cards for the third tier, but I'm going to move us on because I don't want to spend an extra 30 minutes talking about it.
Sure.
So, MM15 is coming out. This is the second time the set was printed. We kind of have a basic pattern. We reviewed it last week. But this, I do think with the release of this set, we're going to see a warp in what you're going to see at different tournaments. And I think it's important to bring up how this will affect, Modern in general. First off, between MM15 coming out and the summer pre-TQ season being modern, I think modern's going to skyrocket in popularity.
You think, like, similar to the way that it did 2 years ago, or way more?
I think way more.
Interesting.
For a few reasons. One, I think more people have friends that are already playing it, so people getting into it isn't going to be, like, it's not going to be like, oh, I built my modern deck, but now I have no friends to play with. That
right.
is less of a problem. Plus, it's an FNM format now. It wasn't then. Two, there's going to be more of this set printed.
Yeah.
Just in general. The SRP is a little bit more fair to how much a pack is worth, so it's less like last time where every store skyrocketed the prices above MSRP. So that's also a benefit. Lastly, the fact that the pre-TQ season, which is a much more like player friendly format than PTQ regulars.
Right.
Like PTQ regulars, like there's a specific type of player that went to PTQs. Pre-TQs, if you're just at your store that day, people just like play casually. And this is a way, like all these things all happening at the same time generally leans people into being able to play this format better and more often.
And there'll be more of these things. So if you're at your store and they're running a pre-TQ and you don't have a modern deck with you, say, oh, but 2 weeks from now we're doing another one, or 3 weeks from
right.
now we're doing another one.
Right.
You can have a deck by then. People might actually play.
When it's PTQ season, there's maybe two modern tournaments. And we're in Los Angeles, so maybe we got three if we were lucky
yeah.
nearby us. And we're in a major metropolitan city. If you're in the middle of, like, if you're in Atlanta, where there's not a lot of places to drive near you, you have one or two PTQs a season if you're lucky. Like, that's two tournaments that you missed because you didn't play, don't have a modern deck. That's fine. But now, every store in your area, every weekend, almost every single weekend, there'll be pre-TQ modern events.
Yeah.
That's makes it more worth having a deck. So these are some of the decks I think will become more popular because of the type of cards in MM15. The first one on my list is Affinity.
It's obviously.
Which is obvious. Like, there are four major cards being reprinted in this set for this deck. Not to mention multiple major cards from this deck were printed in the last Modern Master, so it's already kind of a depreciated value deck. The two cards, and one of them is probably going to be the biggest barrier moving forward, that aren't being reprinted are Ravager and Ink Moth Nexus. And Ink Moth Nexus has not seen a reprint. It wasn't an event deck.
Yeah, it is funky that they didn't reprint Ink Moth Nexus.
Because there's no, they like took Infect, but for some reason they didn't. So like in Modern Masters, I've now heard that Green-White Auras was the Green-White original strategy.
Yeah.
And Infect was the original Green-Black.
Okay.
And Auras didn't really work, and or I think ended up being possibly too strong in the format. And Infect just didn't work with what was going on.
So interesting with Proliferate.
But they somehow left Daybreak Coronet in the set and not
just because they just didn't want to have, yeah.
For whatever reason.
At rare and a weird ball, but it seems a white card. They need another white rare, I guess.
Yeah, but it doesn't. There's literally only one R in the entire set.
The red one?
The red one that you could play it on your own creature
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's a bunch of removal enchantments, actually.
Goblin
so.
Warpaint, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
so. That's, like, Mox Opal, Etch Champion, Cranial Plating, and Blinkmoth Nexus all coming back, plus a bunch of random, like, one-drop ones. And there's a few cards from this deck, like, in Standard right now. Makes the deck a lot more feasible for people to pick their hands up. Next, on the deck's Tron. So this is another deck that's getting a lot of its staples reprinted with, you know, all of the Eldrazi, including specifically Emrakul is the main one it sees play. Eye of Ugin at rare now. Expedition Map at uncommon. And Karn. Those are, like, four pretty, like, scarce cards. And, you know, Karn obviously is the big one that are, like, hard to get your hands on and are going to definitely, like, when I pick my Emrakul up, I'm going to be like, oh, I want to play with this card. So, like, people are going to figure out ways to play it. And Tron is probably the best strategy to take advantage of them.
They didn't print the Tron lands, though.
Right, but they've been reprinted, like, I mean, so like, yeah, they're, like, a dollar maybe each, which
yeah.
is still, like, you know, $12 investment, but that's... Like, a Ravager is a $12 investment for one.
Yeah, it's true. And, I mean, Tron is a good deck. Tron is, like, one of those decks that, like...
is just always on the free, like always on
yeah,
the outskirts.
Yeah, and it does really sweet things.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's cool. It's good. It'll be good. They didn't reprint Grove of the Burn Willows.
Right.
And they didn't reprint Oblivion Stone.
Yeah, those are the two big misses. Though Oblivion Stone, I think, has seen reprinted a Commander product at least once.
Okay, yeah.
So, moving on... Boggles, we talked about them before.
Noggles, as you like to call it.
Noggles is, if I have mentioned Noggles and you're like, what's that deck? I meant Boggles. I meant Boggles. Same as every time I say Mimeomancer, I mean Mind Sensor.
Yep.
And Siege Rhinos or Sage Rhinos.
Daybreak Sage. Palace Sage.
So, Daybreak Coronet. The thing with it was there's really only two barriers to entry for Boggles, and it's Daybreak Coordinate and the green-white land that when you sack it, you draw a card.
Horizon Canopy.
Horizon Canopy. Like, both of these cards were the barriers, and now Daybreak Coronet is not going to be one. So, like, everything else in the deck is a common.
How did they not reprint Horizon Canopy?
They didn't reprint any of the rare lands.
I know, but that seems like such a terrible thing.
I have an idea of what possibly could happen in our future.
Huh.
What if they reprint them in Magic Origins?
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
All five of that, like, that
Horizon Canopy cycle?
The Horizon Canopy cycle.
That would be a fantastic reprint.
Like, it's not too powerful for Standard. It's kind of cool because there's going to be a lot of, like, lands do stuff shenanigans in Zendikar. I definitely can imagine that being what happens as the next, like, land-fixing cycle.
That would be excellent. That card's
really sweet, right?
That card's great.
Yeah, I either see that happening or Filter Lands coming back soon.
Yeah, like, I really think, I really do think that the Horizon Canopy idea makes a lot of sense because I can attest from playing with that card for a great number of years in very many different decks, like, it's tempting to sack it early and draw a card when you need gas, but you just hamstring yourself so often by doing it.
Right, but the other side is, like, sometimes you gain a card and you're no longer losing life. So, like, it's definitely, all of those cards are really interesting. Obviously, the red-green one, which is the one that when it you can tap it to give an opponent a life.
Yeah.
And the green-white one are the best two.
Right.
But it's definitely an interesting cycle. I'd love to see them back in Standard. I don't think they're not, and obviously they're really good, but I don't know that they weren't too powerful when they were there
filter
the
lands
time.
The filter lands were really good.
Yeah.
And Graven Cairns was originally one of those.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the one reason I actually think they might not do it. But they could do, like, the Leyline cycle thing they did, where they give us four weird ones, the four reprints, and then one new black-red weird reprint that they bring it back for whatever reason.
And they
the last deck is Twin. We mentioned it as number zero. The best deck in the format got a lot of reprints for this deck.
So they will not be banning Twin anytime soon.
That's what it seems to me, though. Modern Masters was finalized. Modern Masters 15 was finalized last summer.
Right.
So at that point, Twin was just always decent, but nothing too, like, it didn't win consistently. Birthing Pod was a deck that was more a bigger part of the format. They definitely at that point didn't think about getting rid of Twin, but I do think this means Twin's not getting banned for a while.
This is my thought. I don't think you print Splinter Twin cards in this set, and realistically, after banning Birthing Pod, say to yourself, okay, we're going to promote this card, this deck, and we're going to encourage all these people to play the game, and then we're going to expect no severe back. I think they would more likely cut the Pro Tour than ban the card.
Right.
That's Lapilli's whole theory about, you know, we have to make the decision of, do you ban cards out of people's decks,
right,
or do you run a boring Pro Tour? I think you either run a boring Pro Tour or you have no Pro Tour rather than banning Splinter Twin.
Oh, yeah. But I think there's other – I mean, I think they unban Bloodbraid Elf, I think there's cards you can get rid of. That you can add this time around without having, like, they just got through a heavy ban season. They just banned three cards. So maybe this time around is more of an unban season. And there are a few targets that obviously can be marked for unbanning.
So interestingly enough, and I mentioned it earlier, Serum Visions is coming back to the FNM promo in the fall/summer/August, which is not in Modern Masters. Now, I do think that it is, though it's going to be a promo, like, it's still not going to be that easy to get it. It's still going to like a card you're going to have, like, right now it's like a $7 uncommon or an $8 uncommon, I think.
Right.
I mean, it's maybe going to drop to $5.
Well, like, I would say right now is the last moment. If you're on the precipice of being like, you know what, I really want to get in Modern, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably on this precipice, or you hopefully are since we've been trying to convince you for the last year of doing so. There are definitely specific cards you need to be on the lookout to start picking up, like Snapcaster Mage.
Yep.
And, like, I think Liliana of the Veil will actually be reprinted in Standard at one point. They almost did it last year. And I think the only reason they didn't do it is because mono black devotion would have been way too strong.
And it was, like, coming back already bonkers as the regional promo, and they didn't want to make, I think they didn't want to devalue it.
So, like, that's makes sense there. I don't, and, like, they'll probably bring Snapcaster Mage back. They probably bring Snapcaster Mage back in the future as well.
Maybe
they've done it with other, it might be in the next Modern Masters.
Exactly.
It might be
it'll 100% be the next
Masters. Well, unless they, like, bring it back to Standard and
I just don't know. Like, that card is so powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the biggest reason it was so good in Standard was because you could play it with Mana Leak and Ponder.
Seems good.
Seems so preposterous.
Okay.
If you don't print that card with Mana Leak and Ponder, or even just if you just have one weak counterspell and, like, no card, like no blue.
It definitely does more bad things to the format than, like, Liliana would.
only if you have it paired with those cards. Otherwise, it's like a cool card that you just like get to cast value
true.
Cards.
That's true.
Of.
I'll give you that. Serum Visions. I think actually right now, like this summer would be a great time to pick that Serum Visions FNM promo.
Yeah.
I think that's like a big sign that says just like, hey guys, we have no plans on reprinting this card anytime soon.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. I'm trying to think like Inquisitions, you'll have 2 years before those come back, presumably.
Oh, I think they're coming. No, this September. Inquisition of Kozilek, I think, is coming back.
In
Battle for Zendikar, the place that Kozilek is.
Oh, you think so for sure.
Yeah, I think Thoughtseize rotates out and they put Inquisition of Kozilek in to replace it.
That is not confirmed, guys. That is just Kessler going on record.
Oh, yeah. But I've been pretty good at calling these things out.
Yeah, I called shots. yeah, I mean, I guess you said Mind Sensor was another card that you figured would probably be...
reprinted soon? It seems something that would be cool and standard. Yeah. I don't know if it will. It might not be. It has some feel bads, but like... it's hard to predict what's going to be reprinted and what isn't. Things to really focus on are like mythics and legendary creatures.
Yep.
So like if you see a legendary creature that you want, like Venser, that's pretty expensive and there's not a lot of easy ways to reprint it, then it means like Modern Masters, Conspiracy-like sets, Commander decks, and which is like a trunk and From the Vaults are the best way to get them into the format. But most of those, I think you're pretty safe. Like it's an interesting – look at all the uncommons that weren't reprinted. That are expensive or like close to expensive. Like now's the time to pick up Kitchen Finks because that card's not coming back for a long time.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have your playset of Kitchen Finks, get it now.
Yep, and maybe Path. It seems like it'll
same be Path. Well, Path is another thing. All these FNM promos, you should just be picking up as much as you can.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, that's kind of it for the themes of the episode. Hopefully that was helpful, kind of giving you guys what Modern looks like right now and what you can kind of expect if you were walking into one of the PTQs this next Modern season to be playing against. As always, we ask people on Twitter before we start recording a question. We asked them, what Modern decks are you most excited to build after MM15 comes out? At Alex Belty, he has tweeted us before, has said he's been playing the Podless Pod deck and it's insane. He guesses that he's not really waiting for anything from MM2015.
That is the Collected Company deck we mentioned that is bananas.
Yeah. Russ, who is at Adopt MTG Tokens, said Affinity, and he's thinking Boggles for fun.
Boggles does seem fun.
Yeah.
You'll be able to get those Daybreak Coronets in drafts for nothing because
right.
they don't
They'll
do
like
anything
go last.
In the draft.
Rum Titan, who is at Mr. Blades, I casually want to finish Boggles. Coronet will be affordable, and I might have to wait longer for the Canopy reprint. We agree with you.
Yep.
But hopefully, if I'm right, and this is... not a prediction I'm going to put any backing behind. Magic Origins. Going back to the origins of weird crazy lands from Future Sight. That doesn't make sense. Okay. Rick_man, the Rick man, is Podless Pod, Bloom Titan, and maybe he's going to start a Boggles deck. A lot of people seem to think that they want to build Boggles.
It's a sweet deck.
Yeah. I mean, like, and as I mentioned, Cornet was the major card that was made it difficult to build.
Big time, yeah. Cornet was expensive and unnecessarily expensive.
Justin Bergen, who is at BEARGEN, I'm guessing it's Beergen. he's pumped to finish his Abzan now that he'll be able to afford Goyfs. I actually agree with him. I just finished my Abzan list. I literally have one more Tarmogoyf left that I'm expecting over my Masters of Modern opening.
Only
Modern
one?
Masters opening. I'm only missing one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. On my way. I'm with you, Justin.
I need 4 Tarmogoyfs.
If anyone wants to just send Ben Tarmogoyfs, he'll love you forever. We'll shout you out on the podcast for sure.
We co-own all of our collection together here on the Masters of Modern podcast.
That's not true.
I own Kessler's.
Not legally, not true. At Nick Canner, who is Nick. Is his Twitter name? He's been building Green X Tron. Glad some of the expensive cards got reprinted. I already snagged the land, so no feel bads there.
Nice.
Alexander Newman is hoping for Mox Opals so he can build this absurd thing. I'm assuming it's a Tesserator list. I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
I have to click on a link.
He knows.
Click on a link. I have to use the internet.
If you listen to this podcast, you know that we're big fans of the cards Tesseret and Spellskite.
Oh, no.
And other cards.
It's not. Oh, wow. You get a lot of credit here. This is a Monastery Mentor Pure Steel Paladin deck.
Oh! I'm in.
That plays 4 Paradise Mantle, 4 Quarter Shield, 4 Bonesaw, 4 Kite Shield, 4 Spider Silk Net, 4 Muddle the Mixture, and 4 Retract, and 4 Mox Opal.
Wait.
And like a Gutshot and a Noxious Revival.
So it plays
a bunch of zero-cost equipment and other artifact spells and Monastery Mentor.
And land?
Well, yeah. 15 okay. land. 15 of them.
Wow. That sounds sweet. Sounds like a beast.
I am so excited that that deck exists. Wow, we got so many responses. At Harburg, Nicholas Harburg, he's waiting to build Geist Zoo. Affordable nobles and goyfs are needed. I mean, I'm convinced. I'm with you.
Yeah, I need affordable nobles.
I recommend Tribal Flames for that deck if you haven't thought about it, because it just domes people. You need one hit with Geist and one hit with Tribal Flames, and you pretty much win from that point on.
Tribal Flames is so sweet.
John Farley, already have the gauntlet built, so... Okay, sorry. At JF Fairley already has his gauntlet built, so he has most of the cards from MM15 covered, but he could use some junk pieces. Well, why don't you rub it in, Mr. John Fairley? For his neck modern deck, he wants to build an Impact Tremors plus Purphoros somehow. Hashtag Brewtime.
Oh, man.
That's your new hashtag.
Hashtag Brewtime?
Yeah.
Guys, I'm going to just share this end of the podcast Easter egg with you. I'm working on this deck right now. It's really sweet. I'm not even going to tell you how it works. I'm just going to tell you that it can get 7 power on turn 2 with some consistency. And it can get just an insane bananas amount of power on the table.
Can you list the cards you bought on Star City Games 2 days ago for this deck?
Well, we changed the colors shortly after I bought them. So the only card that I am still playing is Mirror Superior.
Okay.
And I bought the Game Day promo Mirror Superiors, by the way.
The full art ones?
Yes.
Is there anything from Modern Masters 15 that is going in the deck?
Tarmogoyf and Profane Command are both going into the deck.
Cool. Yep. All right. So that you guys all have that to look forward to.
Oh, man, it's going to be sweet.
Cool. So that's it for the episode. You know, as always, I want to remind you guys, go check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. They do awesome Commander content. If you're actually going to be in GP Vegas, we are going to be hanging out all together at some ballroom someplace. We'll probably, in the next episode, shout out where we're going to be, and we'll be all up on the Twitter.
We took over an entire floor of the Tropicana for Saturday night.
Yeah, the whole, like, every poker table, just magic. That's not what's happening.
It's not a real thing.
One day will be the biggest magic podcast of all podcasts.
We play magic cards, guys. Yeah. Not poker.
So if you guys are hanging out there, make sure to tweet at us. We'll see if we can hook up and you guys can come hang out with us on Thursday. Follow us on Twitter. That's important to accomplish what we just said. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kes Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope.
Make sure to rate us on iTunes. I mentioned last week, and I'll mention again, the every 10th person to comment and rate us on iTunes gets a pack up till 120.
And those of you who are waiting for your packs, you will get them.
Yeah. Oh, they're on their way.
Yeah.
We promise. And that's it.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later. Alligator.